May it please the Court, Madam Chief Justice. The issue before this Court is whether a gun dealer can be liable when it has reasonable cause to believe that a customer poses a grave danger with a gun, but contrary to what the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the gun industry inform gun dealers. It asks no questions. It seeks no additional information, but it simply relies on a background check and sells the person a gun. And an hour later, an innocent person is killed by that customer with that gun. There are two independent theories that Your Honors will have to consider today. One is negligent entrustment, and the other is negligence. And the Court will have to consider each of them, regardless of the decision in either one. The first I'll address briefly is negligent entrustment. And this Court has recognized in Evans the four elements for negligent entrustment action, and there's no dispute that appellant meets all four elements. In Evans, this Court recognized that negligent entrustment liability can obtain to a commercial enterprise, in that case a car dealer, in that case for the lease of a car. Respondents' argument is that there is an exception, essentially, for sellers. This Court has never held that there is such an exception. And in fact, the Restatement Second of Torts, Section 390, which this Court has cited approvingly a couple of times, states expressly in the illustrations that negligent entrustment liability does obtain against sellers. Prosser and Keaton have said it expressly as well, and we cite that in the briefs. And there is no reasonable basis, in our view, to hold that a commercial enterprise can simply restructure the transaction. If somebody comes in, for example, and wants to lease a product, that the business can simply say, well, let's sell it instead, maybe even with a generous return policy, which will have the same effect for you, and that way I'm shielded from liability. That makes no sense. And the Court of Appeals in Kansas, in the Shirley v. Glass case, dealt with exactly this issue, and in fact dealt with Court of Appeals precedent that did limit negligent entrustment cases and said that it does not apply to sellers, and it basically rejected that precedent. And so we believe that the
Can you address opposing counsel's argument that that would open up a can of worms and would subject all sellers to liability when they have no way to be aware of the misuse that people might make of what they purchase?
Well, the facts of this case are very rare. I mean, the defendant admitted that they never got a call like this before and they'd never heard a gun dealer getting it. But also, the negligence standard itself imposes the limit. And there is no liability if there's no reasonable cause to believe that a person's dangerous. And the fact is that this Court did not seem troubled by any chilling effect in Evans, where the same problem would exist for the leasing of a product. And also, tort law is supposed to create a chilling effect, to chill unreasonably dangerous conduct. That's one of the purposes of the tort system. And of course, a transaction like happened in this case should not have happened. And perhaps with the imposition of liability, it would not happen in the future.
So there's a long line of precedents in our Court of Appeals that negligent entrustment cannot apply to a chattel. Would you discuss those cases generally?
Some of them are distinguishable in the facts, but I think that the main point is that they're in the ones that state expressly that a seller cannot be liable in negligent entrustment are not supported by this Court's precedent or the restatement or the public policy rationale for tort law. There just is no good reason to exempt sellers. And in fact, in Bosserman, the Court of Appeals recognized negligence for a sale, not a negligent entrustment action, but that seller could be liable. And this Court in Tharp cited Bosserman approvingly, even though in that case there was no evidence of negligence, essentially. So if there is some appellate precedent contrary, we admit, Noble being one, we think those cases are distinguishable and wrongly decided.
And you're saying those cases failed to follow our decision in Evans or the Restatement 390?
Absolutely. I mean, the restatement says expressly in the illustrations that negligent entrustment does apply to sellers. And in fact, that language has been cited in Missouri cases. And Evans, there's nowhere in the four elements of Evans that would suggest that there's an exclusion for sellers. And again, hard to distinguish why a lessor could be liable, but a seller would not be. Unless there are any other questions on the entrustment action, I would like to shift to the negligence action. And in that, the respondent argues that federal law, the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, prohibits Missouri courts from applying negligence law against negligent gun companies that supply dangerous people with firearms and shootings result, as happened in this case. And the basis for that is that this law, which I'll call PLACA for short, defines qualified civil liability actions as the sort of actions that courts cannot hear. And that is a very broad term in the Act. And the key language in that that the court should focus on is that it considers actions where there's damage resulting from, quote, resulting from, and now I'm paraphrasing, criminal misuse of a gun. That term, resulting from, is undefined. The question is, what does that mean? And if you take it at respondents and trial court's meaning, it's extremely broad, and it intrudes greatly on Missouri sovereignty. It basically should be up to the Missouri courts to determine what Missouri common law holds. Missouri courts could hold that gun companies shouldn't be held liable in these cases. That's a decision for Missouri. The state of Missouri also can condition tort cases on requiring the violation of a statutory law. But that's up to Missouri. In PLACA, Congress both prohibits Missouri courts from applying Missouri law and also creates the statutory precondition for negligence cases, because in Exception 2 of Section 7903, there's what's called the predicate exception, which essentially says that if there's a knowing violation of law by a gun company, then PLACA does not protect you. And then Missouri courts are permitted to apply negligence law. So Congress has imposed this statutory requirement, which, again, Missouri could choose to do so, but Congress has no basis doing so.
And why does the Supremacy Clause apply here?
Because it's an intrusion on federalism, and, on a state sovereignty. And there are a few key Supreme Court cases, U.S. Supreme Court cases, which the court must consider in construing this. And the most important one, I believe, is Bond versus United States, which was a 2014 case, which, by the way, comes after the other cases that have rejected this argument regarding PLACA. So that's crucial. And what Bond says is that when you have a federal statute in which there is a term that on its face would be extremely broad and intrude on a traditional area of state governance, in that case it was the definition of chemical weapons, which would federalize crimes regarding sort of household chemicals, and they said basically that's what states should be doing. But if on its face you have this broad reach into state areas of governance, it's incumbent on the court to search for a interpretation of that term that's more narrow, that does not intrude on state sovereignty. The Gregory v. Ashcroft case has a similar idea. Bond takes it a step further, where basically you have to find a clear intent in a congressional act to intrude on state sovereignty in this way. In PLACA, you're faced with the Bond problem. You're faced with this term resulting from, which on its face seems very broad. So you should look for, you must look for, a more narrow reading.
Well, didn't the U.S. Supreme Court just last year say, is it the Barrage case, that the definition of resulting from is caused by? I mean, albeit it was a different federal statute they were interpreting, but didn't they equate those two phrases?
In candor, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that state, with that case, but I will say that in PLACA, you would have to look to the rest of the statute. And in PLACA, much stronger than Bond case, the purposes, stated purposes and findings of the Act inform the meaning of resulting from. The first stated purpose of PLACA is, and I'm paraphrasing, that the harm must be solely caused by, not paraphrasing, that's what they said, solely caused by criminal use. It's therefore that Congress is making absolutely clear that if the sole cause of the harm is a criminal act, the gun company is not responsible. However, if there are multiple causes of criminal act, like this case, one cause is negligence of the gun dealer, one cause is criminal act, then there is liability. The word solely was particularly important for Congress. In fact, it was one of the few additions to this act after it failed to pass, and then they put in the word solely in the first purpose, and it passed the next session. And solely caused by is also in the findings of PLACA. So twice Congress is saying that. The court cannot disregard that language, particularly in light of Bond, where you're looking for narrower meaning and Congress is giving it to you. And the legislative history further supports it, because legislative history, and we cite this, Senator Craig, who was the author of the bill, stated repeatedly, this law does not provide immunity where a gun company is negligent, repeated over, over, and over. So again, much easier than the Bond case. Basically, what Gregory says as well, Gregory v. Ashcroft, is that the court, or the Congress, would have to state expressly, in this case, would have to state expressly, we are prohibiting negligence cases. And there is a reading that the respondents make that implicitly they prohibit negligence cases because they explicitly allow negligent entrustment cases. That's not good enough under Bond and Gregory. When you're intruding on state sovereignty, when you're implicitly preempting a broad area of cases, Congress has to explicitly say so, and it clearly didn't. It could have said we're prohibiting multiple cause negligence cases like this one. It didn't, and it said exactly the opposite in its first purpose, in the findings, and in the legislative history. I see my time's run out. Unless there are further questions.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
May it please the court. Good morning. At issue here is not the underlying facts of this case, because the important facts that we have here are not in dispute. We are here to talk about essentially three points: negligent entrustment, and then on the constitutionality, I'll make a fourth point, statute interpretation. Then we go to the third point, would be 10th Amendment, and last point would be due process and equal protection. I want to touch upon negligent entrustment real quick. There is not an exception, nor do we argue there's an exception for a seller. The whole idea is, the third element of negligent entrustment is, what is an entrustment? An entrustment is not a sale of a good. An entrustment, there's an intent that you're going to give an item to somebody, a chattel, and they're going to give it back.
That's not in the elements in the restatement or in this court's decision in Evans, is it?
It is. It's the third element. That there has
that
to be.
You're going to get it back?
I beg your pardon?
Neither of them say you have to intend to get it back in order for it to apply that. So you're asking us to add an element.
I'm not. I didn't mean to interrupt you. The third element is there has to be entrustment. And what I'm saying is, what is entrustment? We have to look at what entrustment is, and that's what the courts have looked at.
And I'm saying, but for instance, the restatement clearly is talking about negligent entrustment and clearly states it applies to sales. So it does not require you to intend to get it back. It uses the term negligent entrustment more broadly than you would like us to use it. Why should we adopt your interpretation and not that one?
Well, with negligent entrustment, and I'm going to take a side step here, the court did look at the elements in the restatement. I agree with that, and we agree with that in our brief. It never has explicitly adopted the comments, even though it looked at it where it said a seller. But we still have to look at what an entrustment is. And if there's not an intent to return it, there's no entrustment when you sell something.
But the point is, 390 does use entrustment to mean intent, without the intent to return it. So are you saying they misused the term in the restatement, or?
I think we're probably talking about the same thing here, and maybe I'm using the word intent too strongly, because when you entrust something, when you sell something to somebody, you're not entrusting that article to them, like an availment situation, or a negligent entrustment of an automobile when you're going to get that car back. When you sell something to somebody, you're not getting it back. So maybe the intent word's a little strong, but there has to be some type of control of that item after it's sold,
and
there's not.
As Judge Schiff points out, though, the interpretation of entrust by the restatement does not match your definition of entrust. Do you agree with that?
No, maybe I'm not saying it correctly.
No, you are saying it, but you're on its face, the restatement applies to sales. Well, I'm not talking about Missouri and whether we do that. I'm talking about the restatement. It applies to sales, so where you don't intend to get it back. So it clearly does not use the word entrust in the narrower way you're asking us to use it under Missouri law, because it applies to sales, and sales, you don't get it back. You entrust it to them means you provide it to them, you give it into their care. It's how they use it. Now, you may not think that's a good use of the term, but you're asking us to more narrowly apply the doctrine that otherwise is set out in the Restatement 390, because it on its face applies to sales.
We're on the same page.
Okay.
I agree with your interpretation of the Restatement Second. Other courts have interpreted the same way. I do not disagree with that. That's what Restatement Second 390 says.
Okay.
Not going to disagree with you on that. I think that's pretty clear as could be that it can apply to sales, and they've actually done it in our sister state right across the border in Kansas. I agree with that. My position is that Missouri has not adopted that approach yet.
And I know you rely on Noble and some of the other cases, and they are longstanding, but the Court of Appeals doesn't get to change what this court says. And so Evans didn't put that in that requirement. In effect, you're arguing because it's been a longstanding Court of Appeals decision, this court is bound by it.
No.
Which is, that seems to be the way it reads in the brief, because you're saying this has been longstanding, so we shouldn't come in now and change it. And I appreciate your more fundamental policy arguments you make as to, and those are appropriate, but if we think the Court of Appeals was wrong, that is kind of our role, is to clarify the law. If we think the Court of Appeals has added elements that otherwise shouldn't be or aren't there. So go ahead and I'm saying that so you can address your arguments to that point, why the Court of Appeals was right in your view, as opposed to why we have to follow them.
And we're completely on the same point. If this court believes, obviously being the Supreme Court, the underlying courts must follow the Supreme Court. I completely agree with that. It did not specifically adopt that elements, the comments from the Restatement 390, and I don't mean to direct my comments at you, but you're asking the question.
Absolutely.
And the cases that have followed that have talked about the essential entrustment that I've talked about, that they said, well, we don't believe it's applied to the sale of a chattel when it's never going to be returned or there's no intent to return it. And if this court doesn't believe that is the law that was established in Evans, that's why we're here, because it's not clear, because the courts that have expanded upon Evans and have ruled on the sale of chattel said you cannot have it when you have a sale of chattel. When you have a loan, you have a lease, anything like that, when the item's going to be returned, they said, yes, you can have negligent entrustment. But as it stands right now, the Court of Appeals have said you cannot have negligent entrustment when you have the sale of a chattel, when you relinquish that good and you don't get it back. So I agree with you that that's what the restatement says, and other courts have adopted the same way that you have. I'm not disputing that, nor are we disputing that. The issue is whether that comment should be applied and whether Missouri would recognize a negligent entrustment for the sale of a chattel.
And thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, I understand the issue of where if a person comes in, a bona fide buyer, and buys a weapon under the laws of the state of Missouri and they don't know anything about the seller, I mean the buyer, that's just the transaction. However, when you have these facts where the mother calls, talks to the same person, who's the clerk, who then sells the gun to a purchaser, who the mother says is going to go off and kill her father, I mean, that puts the dealer on notice. I'm not sure there's a way of sort of divining the difference, but and maybe that's a jury issue, but what if someone would call in and say my son and daughter-in-law are going to go off and kill people at a mall, and calls a gun dealer and says, don't sell them a gun? I mean, that's kind of some of the issues we're dealing with today. But this case, I've never seen a fact situation that would point to a as we say in the, it says, for every wrong there shall be a remedy. Again, there's a way of distinguishing between the bona fide buyer who's going off hunting, buying a gun to exercise their Second Amendment rights, than someone who you know, or you have reason to believe, will do mayhem.
Right, and I believe the Noble Court addressed it better than I could. They said they classified that as a negligent sale theory, that even if there is notice or even if there is a reason or should have known, the state of Missouri, as they interpret, still did not recognize a negligent entrustment theory because there was actually a sale of, in that case, it was a magazine and some ammunition, but it still qualified under PLACA. And because Missouri didn't recognize when you actually sell the item, they said that was basically negligent sale theory, and they didn't recognize it in that case.
Counsel, setting aside Missouri law for the second, would you agree that Congress, when they said negligent entrustment, specifically meant sales, specifically included that in the definition of negligent entrustment?
Quite frankly, I didn't look at negligent entrustment or the intent of negligent entrustment by Congress. And we certainly didn't argue that in this case because the whole theory on the summary judgment was not that PLACA precluded this negligent entrustment. It's just the state of Missouri didn't recognize negligent entrustment. So we never made that argument.
Okay. So if it's recognized as a matter of state law, would you concede that it fits within the exception under PLACA?
I think every case law says that. Okay. If Missouri recognizes a negligent entrustment for the sale of a chattel, PLACA would not preclude it. Anyone else has any questions on negligent entrustment? I'll move on to the constitutionality issues. Those are not, I remember taking constitutional law a long time ago, and this is actually convoluted to me at first, but then I started looking at this, and it makes a lot more sense of the Commerce Clause. When Congress acts under the enumerated powers that are specifically given to them, i.e., the Commerce Clause, this exact court ruled 5 years ago that it will not disturb that under a 10th Amendment issue. Congress has the right to regulate interstate activities. Here, clearly the sale of any qualified product, be it a firearm and the other ancillary products that involve firearms, is clearly interstate commerce. And that's what Congress did here, is they regulated interstate commerce. Now, they take a couple approaches that this solely caused by and criminal conviction approach should prevent the statutory interpretation of applying here, so I'm going to back up from the constitutionality a little bit. At no point in time did Congress require a criminal conviction for the unlawful or criminal use of the gun. If they would have meant so, they would have done so. And if you look at the section immediately underneath what a qualified civil liability is, they do use the word conviction, convicted. They don't use it in the section as far as a qualified civil liability. The solely caused by argument is something that is taken from the preamble of the actual statute. It's nowhere contained within the actual statute. And we probably spent more pages than we should have talking about when you have a preamble, it doesn't change the substance of the actual statute. The statute is about as clear as statutes can be. And if you read the qualified civil liability action, which is under 7903.5 subpart A, it's very clear that this statute was designed to prevent negligence claims, and not ones solely caused by, but if there is a criminal or a unlawful use of a weapon, that was the whole reason for this act. And to hold otherwise would essentially gut that whole act. There would be no reason for the act, and there would really be no reason for any of these exceptions, i.e. negligent entrustment, negligence per se, and there's four other ones that are really not an issue in this case. So if we take the interpretation that the appellant has here, there is really no reason for the PLACA statute. Also, another kind of thing I wanted to point out, somebody always taught me when I was a young lawyer about don't reinvent the wheel, and the exact issues that are being addressed by plaintiff have been addressed and overruled by the Ninth Circuit, the Second Circuit, the U.S. District Court of District Columbia, Alaska, Illinois, and the District of Columbia. All these same issues have been addressed that they're addressing with the constitutionality and the interpretation of the statute, and they have all been struck down. And we have that fully in our brief if you want to reference that.
But not the East Circuit.
I beg your pardon?
But not the East Circuit.
The East Circuit.
Eighth Circuit.
Eighth Circuit has not addressed this. You're correct. Finally, we want to talk about the due process challenge here. Under the due process, for them to say that this statute is invalid, there has to be a rational basis review. And at no point in time in the brief do they do any kind of analysis that there was any type of irrational or arbitrary conduct by Congress in passing this act. Because they don't even address the rational basis review, I believe that argument should fall on its face. However, I think if we even look at it, there's certainly nothing irrational or arbitrary about Congress's choice here. That's what the legislative intent is. That's what the legislator does, I should say, is to adjust the incidence of our economic lives. That's what our elected officials do. There's nothing irrational or arbitrary about adjusting things in our economic lives. Does the court have any other questions for me?
You didn't specifically address the bond case. Would you address your opponent's argument that the bond case requires a different interpretation than the cases that you cite?
Are you talking about the
bond versus U.S.?
Right.
The cause by? I guess I'm not.
And that it requires a narrow interpretation.
No, the case that was cited was a recent Supreme Court case that talked about the definition should be.
I lost my page here.
Meaning resulting from?
Resulting from. They use the definition that Supreme Court case that was cited, and I cannot remember the name, nor can I even get close to pronouncing it, was caused by. This statute, again, is about as clear as it could be, and when you read this, I mean,
we really need to go no further than read what qualified civil liability action is.
When the language is as plain as it can be and unambiguous as it is here, there's really no reason to take any other approach than we have in any other case. And the language of caused by, as the Supreme Court ruled, clearly here the injury was caused by an unlawful or criminal use. It can't be any clearer than that. The gun operated as intended. Unfortunately, the result came about here in the death of somebody, but it was caused by the criminal and unlawful use. And one last point on that is it's certainly a criminal act to point the gun at somebody and shoot them, and the exact statute that she was found to be mentally defective says it was a criminal act. I believe that's statute 522.030 under the Missouri statutes. I appreciate your guys' time.
Thank you.
First, Your Honors, Ms. McKay referred to this court's decision, I believe, rejecting the Tenth Amendment argument. I believe that was Didel, which was not a Commerce Clause case. It was a spending power case, and the court said expressly that that's very different because basically Missouri made the decision to accept federal money with conditions, and that's they can be restricted much more when a state does so.
If a parent called the car dealership and said, my son's coming down and he's got his own money to buy his own car, but he's got 15 speeding tickets and he drives too fast, and I'm sorry, and don't sell him the car, I think he's going to hurt himself. Goes down there, buys the car, on the way home, drives too fast, misses the curb, and injures somebody. Would they be liable under your view of negligent entrustment?
I mean, I think what it would come down to is that negligence is a reasonable cause to believe that it's a danger, it's sufficient danger. I mean,
that's my point. Mom calls, he says 10 speeding tickets. Please don't do it under your view. Would that survive a motion for summary judgment under your view of negligence?
I think probably not because the danger doesn't seem sufficient to me. But that's, it comes down to whether there's negligence. This argument actually, I mean, these facts are strong, but there could be stronger facts. I mean, for example, terrorists who are not prohibited from buying guns, but under this view, under their view, if the FBI called a gun dealer and said, we can't tell you not to sell a gun to this terrorist, but this person is a terrorist and they're going to come into your gun store and buy a gun, we suggest that you don't sell it. The view of respondent is, it's their policy to sell that person a gun as long as they pass a background check. Whenever they pass a background check, we sell the gun. In our view, that's negligent entrustment. There has to be a remedy for that.
Or to switch Judge Fisher's example, hypothetical a little bit, what if the call was that this person is drunk now and has 10 DWIs and they're going to come in and drive it home? And would you, please don't sell them a car because they're right now inebriated?
I think that would be a stronger case. And I think it all comes down to, is there negligence? Some of the cases would go one way, some would go the other. But I think there's another point here, which for some of this, it may not be negligent entrustment, but it would be negligence. And that's why it's important for the court to deal with the negligence issue as well, because negligence can involve a duty to inquire, to get more information. Maybe there isn't reasonable cause to deny that sale now, but maybe there is a duty to try to get more information. And then there's a question of, you know, what does that involve? And so I think it is important to see whether PLACA prohibits negligence as well. That's a broader claim, and I just see my time's running out, but you know, briefly, I mean, Bond and the Gregory case clearly would require this court to read the definition of qualified civil liability action and phrase resulting from narrowly to allow negligence cases. And the fact that Congress didn't write PLACA in the prettiest way possible, which is true whatever side you go on. In fact, respondent argued that this was the law is clear. Well, their interpretation of the law.
Your time is up.
And one last point. In essence, we all go back to the pesky case of Paul's Graft versus Long Island Railroad and the guy with the fireworks.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.